the beginning of the year, we spoke to the church and we said, okay, we're going to start investing into this metaverse concept. We have no idea how it looks like or how it's going to work, but we're going to start investigating. This year, the idea is to start investigating it, to start asking the questions, to understand how it works, what can we do, because we don't just want to take the same service and put it on the metaverse. We're trying to understand the culture of the metaverse and do something that is relevant for the metaverse.
Welcome to the Church Digital Podcast. Through this podcast, we'll talk about the technological innovations within the church. But more than tech for tech itself, we'll address deeper questions. Is disciple making possible digitally? How should we approach the digital mission field? Can a biblically grounded church operate in digital space? Oh, and where does the metaverse fit into all this? Whether you're a big or small church, an established church, or a startup church plant, the Church Digital's goal is to help churches like yours learn to be a multiplying church, digitally and physically. Our heart? That churches like yours would discover a newfound focus on disciple making that will revolutionize your church. And now, here's your host, Jeff Reed.
Hey, all right, we got episode 226 here with the Church Digital Podcast, and I'm excited about this one. We're bringing in a homer, somebody from the hometown here, to talk about what they're doing in digital ministry. And so now you remember one of the themes that we're hitting with the podcast here in the summer is we're really looking at some of the global approaches and maybe some of the contextualization as we're looking at African-American churches. El Michelle just did a podcast last week on that with us, talking about the African-American church and what she's doing through ministry out of the Tallahassee, North Florida area. And what's interesting today, we're still sticking in Florida here, and we're digging into maybe the Hispanic church and what it looks like to do Hispanic church online and reaching globally a church that's reaching some of those cultures. And so, like, I always want to put the disclaimer here on this, dude. I'm a white man with a goatee. There's a lot that, to be honest, I don't know. And so I'm positioning myself as a listener, asking some questions, and I always want to be like, hey, yo, if I'm offensive in this moment, I'm trying to get the apology in advance to know that that's not really the heart of what I'm going for. And hopefully, listening audience, you know me at this point to be true. So definitely excited about this conversation. And I did want to bring into it Ezekiel Fattori. And so Ezekiel, hey man, thanks for jumping on the podcast here and being with us.
Hey Jeff, thank you so much for having me here. I'm so excited. So excited.
Yeah. So Ezekiel is with Casa Miami.
Yep.
Which is a church that I've never heard of in my backyard, which is awesome. I love that. And so we got connected through some friends over at New Thing and started talking, and I just started learning about what Casa Miami is doing globally and how they're utilizing online. And it was like, oh my gosh, I want to unpack more of this. I want to learn more about what this is happening and maybe some lessons that we can start to apply towards digital churches and church online and things like that. So, hey, Ezekiel, maybe just to kick us off, tell us a little bit of your church's story. Tell us what you guys are about.
Okay. The funny thing is when you say we're going to learn about the Hispanic church, what you call Hispanic church, for me, it's church, period, because it's what we do. So let's see if we can find out what are the unique things, because it's like riding a bike, you know? You don't even know what you're doing until someone asks you, what is it that you're doing? It's like, I'm not sure. So let's see what's going on.
Love it.
So we've been around for 18 years now. My dad and my mom founded the church 18 years ago. Then they transitioned the church to me and my wife 4 years ago. My dad passed away 3 years ago, and then we rebranded the church. It was called Casa de Jesus, Casa de Jesus. And we felt like the things we were doing were not matching the name, or the name was not matching what we were doing as a church. So we rebranded it as Casa Church. And we wanted a name that could be pronounced well in Spanish and well in English. Anyone can say casa and knows what a casa is. So, and from there, we've been working a lot on connecting with the Hispanic culture in Miami. One thing that happened is during COVID, of course, as everyone had to close down, for us, it wasn't such a hard thing because we had been doing church online for 12 years. That maybe for the American churches, that was something normal, but not for the Hispanic churches when we started 12 years ago. People were throwing tomatoes at us, saying, you shouldn't be doing that because we need to go to the place. Until, of course, COVID happened and everyone moved to online. So for us, it wasn't that hard. We were ready for it. Actually, it helped us have like one focus, saying, okay, this is the thing we have to do. We didn't have to do the thing with the people in the room and then the thing online. So we just were doing online and our reach grew like crazy. And we went from having maybe 5,000 subscribers on our YouTube to 75,000 right now. Our Facebook group a lot. It has like 2 million followers right now, and the Instagram has 145,000. And all that happened during COVID. So it's been interesting. It's been interesting to be able to connect with so many people.
Yeah, those are some ridiculous numbers. Let's back up because I want to dig into like 2 million YouTube. But I mean, you made the statement 12 years ago. You started doing online, and there was some pushback against that. You know, you got to be in person towards that. What's the if I can ask, like, what's the motivation? Maybe 12 years ago, like, is it just like the theology is very bent towards physical proximity? There wasn't access to the technology. It was a lack of understanding towards what relationships could be like digitally. Like, walk me through maybe some of that tension that you felt years ago, maybe some of the tension that you're feeling in COVID. And do you feel that same tension today?
I feel there's always this tension that if you're not in the room, you're a second degree member of the church. And they say, if we don't see you in the room, then you're not in the room. And we started pushing a lot through that. And we started saying, well, that's not true. Like, if you're deciding to watch it from home, it's good. It's okay. We're not going against it. We're just understanding it as it is. And but I feel they connect theology to it. But there's no theology that supports any of the technology. Jesus was always using technology. When he got into a boat and went far from the bay, he was using the technology he had with the water to connect with his voice. So I feel like that's what we're trying to do, connect with it through the technology. Also, I studied advertising. I have a bachelor's in advertising. And being able to connect through technology has always been a passion for me. So I feel like I didn't know if it was wrong or not what I was doing. I just wanted to do it. We just wanted to jump onto it. And there were some churches that were doing it on the American side. And we learned from them. And we said, okay, let's do it.
And so now, you know, as a result of COVID, you've seen some astronomical numbers. Would you say 145,000 on Instagram?
Yes.
Two million on YouTube. I mean, like, that's on Facebook. Who are these people? Do you have any idea where they came from? Like, what do you know about these people that are connecting with your church?
Well, we're trying to learn that. Actually, we're in the process of doing a whole marketing study of the people that are connecting and trying to understand who they are. But of course, something that is helping us a lot is the small groups we do through Zoom every week. Between 300 to 500 people connect to our small groups from all around the globe. And from there, we connect to them and we're trying to learn who they are.
So part of your discipleship strategy, discovering who these people are, getting them in the small groups and where there's, mm-hmm. you know, relational connections. How much of a reach are we talking about? Like, are you Latin, Central, South America? You know, what is this reach thing actually look at practically?
It's South Central America. It's South America, Central America, mostly. Actually, we just did, because we're trying to add the physical part to the digital part. because we feel we're a church that is digital, that has in-person expressions around the globe. So we're trying to do pop-up churches.
Wow.
So we went to Argentina on January, on Buenos Aires. We went to Buenos Aires. And we opened a registration to be like, okay, whoever wants to come, we want to meet you. We want to spend some time with you. And in Argentina, 120 people signed up to be there. People that we had no idea who they are, who they were until that moment. And we just came back last week from Bogota, Colombia. And 400 people showed up to the event. And we connected to them. We spent 2 or 3 hours talking to them and crying, listening to the stories on how their lives have been changed and impacted for not only the church online, but the way we see God as well.
Yeah, I love the opportunities, what you're talking about how to like reach into people, get to know them, build a relationship, change their lives through the relationships that are establishing. Now, you said something, and I wasn't expecting it because it's rare when I hear it. And so I'm going to ask you to unpack this a little bit.
Okay.
You said that you're a digital church that has physical locations as opposed to a physical church that does digital ministry. First off, thank you. That warms my heart. But I would love for you to unpack kind of what the story is behind that statement. Why are you a digital first church as opposed to a physical church that's doing an add-on of digital ministry?
Well, before COVID, we were doing both. We were doing digital and in person. During COVID, we moved to digital and our reach and the people that started connecting grew up like crazy. So we felt like, okay, this is what we need to do. And I don't know if this is the thing that everyone needs to be doing, but this is what we know how to do, or this is the thing that it's common to us. So we started doing it. And then when people started coming back, we said, okay, we're just going to keep it this way. We're going to keep it as a digital church that has in-person expressions. So, for example, people come on a Sunday to our, what we don't call it auditorium anymore, we call it studio. So they come to our studio. It's around for 100 or 120 people. They come to a studio. We do live worship. We do live preaching. And we stay after connecting to the people that came in person, that it's our in-person expression. But of course, everything it's thought out for the people that are watching online. I'm all the time looking at a camera while I'm preaching, and everyone that talks in the room is talking to a camera. So the digital part comes first, because of course you have 120 people in person, but then at the end of the week you're gonna have between the people that watch live and the people that watch on demand, you're gonna have 3,000 to close to 5,000 or 7,000 people watching. So that's what we're doing.
Did you intentionally go after, like, going global? At what point did you, because I'm speculating here, I'm dreaming here, this was your father's church. Did he have this vision for digital? Did it just magically happen? Did you intentionally go after digital first? Like, what was that transitionary period? What did that look like?
No, it wasn't easy at all. Because at the same time, when my dad was a pastor, it was really hard to make him understand that he had to look at the camera or why we were putting so many lights. And so we were like putting the cameras in the places that he was looking at. So if he used to, we would move his iPad or his Bible to the side where the camera was, so we could have a shot of him looking at the camera. Of course, it wasn't easy at all. But we kept pushing. We kept pushing. Is the thing that was vibrating for us. We had a heart for this. We had a heart for all these people. We were not thinking about it. It was, I'm not going to say that I saw it before. I knew it. No, we just started doing it. And it kept growing and it kept happening. Of course, I love how all the communication is changing everywhere. So I wanted just to follow it.
No, I love all of this. Now, Do you feel that, does the Hispanic culture, like your region, Latin and South America, mm-hmm. do they, do 2022, do they connect with digital? Like, are people in other countries, other continents, are they open to receiving, to being part of a church that operates digitally first? Like, is there tensions? What maybe is some of that relationship and some of those early conversations look like with people?
I had the same question until we came back from Colombia last week, where people that saw us for the first time in person, they had been connecting for 2 years and a half. So it was 400 people showing up at the place. And we stayed, we heard two stories of people saying, it's not only the digital church, because it's, we know it's not just the medium, it's the message, right? It's a way of seeing church as well. It's a way of seeing God as well. So people were saying, the good thing about digital church is I could assist without being judged at all. For example, there was a person that, it was a transgender person coming to the place. He came with his girlfriend and people that were gay, lesbians. People from all over the spectrum were there. Oh, another cool thing that happened is many young kids bringing their parents to the pop-up so they could show them to say, hey, you see this? This is making me good. And I know it's hard for you to understand that I'm not going to an in-person church or I'm not going to your church, but I'm connecting to this. And it was incredible to see the parents after the event coming to say thank you to us, and they had the shirts of the church merch on, and they were like, they were even talking more than their kids to us because they were happy for what was happening. So, yeah, there's tension, of course. There's tension on churches that they feel like they're losing people, but at the same time, there's a bunch of people that they wouldn't go to an in-person church. They wouldn't, because they don't feel guilty because they're part of the new generation. And some, they're like, for my lifestyle or for who I am, I wouldn't go to an in-person church. So yeah, there is tension, but it's far more better the good things that are coming with it.
Yeah, we feel that, at least I've seen the same thing with the churches that I've worked with, that like the digital expressions of church, like what you're doing in Latin and South America, where they have no physical footprint. And even like the studio that you're describing, we're really describing like more of a digital first mentality. But what we're finding are the churches like that are exactly what you're saying. You were reaching a different type of person, mm-hmm. people that the buildings aren't reaching. And so often, you know, when we talk with physical churches that are doing digital ministry second, you know, there's this fear of competing with the physical building, and these people should be in a physical building. And so I've had a pastor in my life tell me that I should confess my sin for pulling people out of the bride of Christ by helping churches, you know, do online ministry and things. Side conversation for another day. He's a friend of mine, actually. But the heart of this is that we're finding digital churches, digital first churches like yours, are reaching different people than the buildings are reaching. And so I love some of these stories, even the transgender trying to go into a safe environment to ask questions, the dialogue like that. We hear that story time and time again in digital and metaverse church. And so that's super exciting. I know I'm curious towards this, and this may be more of a Miami based question. Like, so I'm in Miami, you know, like it's predominantly Hispanic, by far, that's the stronger culture here within the 305 and the 786. When you get down to the Latin and South America, is there any contextualization? Like, do we have to worry about, you know, different dialects, different languages, different ways to connect with people in different countries? Like, how much adaptation do you do?
Well, actually, I love that Miami has so many cultures, because even inside the Hispanic culture, you have the Argentinians, the Colombians, Venezuelans, and we don't say the same words. Even there's stuff that I'm from Argentina, but there are words that I say that are like cursing for other Hispanics. but I'm not cursing in Argentinian, basically. So, but I love that being in Miami has helped me understand all those differences. So, believe it or not, I've been trained for 18 years on how to preach to Colombians, Argentinians, Venezuelans, from Puerto Rico, from Cuba. I've been talking to them my whole life, all my ministry. So suddenly when we go online, we've been doing it. So I know that someone that is listening from Colombia is going to understand what I'm saying. I know that someone from Argentina that is listening is going to understand what I'm saying, because I've been trained to see all those differences.
That's interesting. Like there was the situation, and I don't remember the two languages here, but this has been like my fear when I worked. And I let me say this at a personal level. I have been told not to speak Spanish because me speaking Spanish offends Spanish people. And so like, I know a little bit, I've lived here long enough to be able, but I've been told don't even try. And so like, I'm respectful of the cultures, but I don't understand it. But you know, there was a situation I can remember, and this may be a little too personal, but I was overseeing Spanish translation at a physical church here in town. And, the translator used the word, I don't know the country, but was trying to say, the pastor said excited. And so the translator, you know where I'm going. The translator didn't say excited. He used the word that for, excited, you know, in the type of way that you don't want to be excited in yes. a church and setting. And so it was like, oh my gosh. And it became like this huge controversy. What are we doing? How are we translating? How are we? All right. So look, how's you? Cause you said something. You're like, man, I grew up here in Miami. I've been here for 18 years. I understand all these cultures. How do you get there? Like, how do you understand that?
By laughing at yourself, by talking to your friends, by lowering your pride or lowering your country pride. I'll be like, no, I'm going to speak always like as an Argentinian or as a Cuban or as a, by lowering that and trying to love everyone and to say, okay, if this word offends you, I'm going to find another one. If this that I'm saying you don't understand it, then I'm going to say something else. So I feel in my case, Argentinians were so proud of how we speak, who we are. And so I had to work on my ego and say, okay, I'm going to learn. So every time I'm with a different culture, I start asking questions. And my wife, she's so big into taking care of that. We respect every culture. She's always like, we got to be careful of not offending anyone. So I feel that that's been the key.
I love that, positioning yourself as the learner, asking questions, trying to get feedback and direction and guidance from someone position, even giving them an opportunity to own what some of that is. And
of course, finding friends that are willing to let you ask questions that maybe are uncomfortable. And for example, two years ago, when with the African American culture and everything that started happening, I needed to ask so many questions, and I didn't want to be disrespectful, but I needed to ask the questions. So I found friends and I said, hey, I need to ask you questions. And if something that I'm saying is not right, please forgive me, but I need to learn. I need to understand what is it that is going on in your culture and with your people so I can cry with you. I can be with you. So I feel like having friends that are willing to be offended by your questions and not take it personal and help you grow and learn, that's the key.
What's the percentage of, so you've got, you know, thousands connecting online, ridiculous numbers in Facebook and YouTube. Like, do you have a grasp of how much of that is US based? How much of that is global based? Have you worked through any of that yet?
Not me, but the creative director of the church, yes. And he's working on that. But we know that it's around 10 or 15% on each part. we know we have 10 or 15% on US, then Mexico, then Colombia, then Argentina. So it's pretty mixed.
Wow. Okay. So what I'm hearing is a very spread, like you're not predominant one or another or another.
No.
That's great. Cause that actually kind of leads, I'm going to back up to your race. How do you address race in that situation? Like that's, I don't want to say that's a US centric, but it was much more of I'm going to use the word explosion. It was very focused in the United States. A lot of the tension centered around that, but your audience is global and may or may not even agree or understand some of these intricacies, like what we're dealing with on the race. Like what was that for your season, for your church?
Well, in my case, I had to take the time to ask the questions to my friends and then communicate to the community and try to teach them or say, this is what's going on. Because the issue of race, it's also very, very, very bad on Latin America as well. Even worse, maybe. I think we're more conscious on United States about this issue that it's on Latin America. So how we drove through it, I could have not say anything and there was not a problem with it. But I felt that I had to be the voice and make everyone understand how does it feel and I try to make it sense to the people in every country.
What does some of the technology look at like this? So like if you're equidistant across a lot of these countries, you know, I've done mission trips down in Latin and South America, and I know they're the lack of technology. Like they landlines are non-existent. Actually, I went down there maybe in 2018, 2017, thinking, oh, we're going to start doing like TV apps and we're going to push it down there. And so I'm trying to get Apple TVs or Rokus and all these things. And none of these homes had Wi-Fi and none of them had viable internet in, and all the technology was cell phone based. And it really, it was a, I don't know that it was a challenge as much as an opportunity to pivot, but like, what are you finding that they're utilizing mobile? Are they utilizing web? Like how are they connecting with you?
Well, they're mainly connecting through YouTube, and yeah, it's through mobile. That I feel we try to use as much as we can the technology that it's already available. Yes, they have issues. There are parts and parts. There are parts in Latin America that have great technology, like Mexico. Every country has sites that are like less privileged than others, but you're always going to find some that they do have good connection and they do connect to the church. Or we have some cases, for example, I have a kid in Venezuela that whenever he goes to his friend's house, he downloads the YouTube video, he converts it into audio, he puts it into his phone, and then he listens to it. And whenever he has Wi-Fi, he sends me a DM through Instagram to say, hey, thank you for the teaching. But I love when people go as far as doing all that in order to connect. But yeah, it's always a challenge.
As you're wrestling, like how far along are you on the path of this digital strategy growing in the physical? Like as you're looking at, how do you get a YouTube user and convert that into a micro church or a house church or something like that? What are you guys wrestling with on that space?
Well, first of all, in order, we're wrestling on how to connect with so many people, because of course we have, 3,000, 7,000 views after 1 week. But as I said, we have 300 to 500 people connecting to a small group. So we're in the whole process of creating a CRM process. While people, after connecting or after sending their first email, we can guide them into a small group and how to make the process interesting for them. So we're wrestling with that right now. That is one of the things we're trying to understand, how to connect more people from the YouTube experience, from the live experience to a small group. And then maybe they show up at a pop-up when we do it at their country.
Awesome. Talk to me. You said pop up a couple times. I want to dig deep on that. So you're just like, have you done any of these? Kind of describe for me what that process looks like. You just show up in Venezuela and do a service? Like, there's got to be something more to that, right?
So we just came, as I said, we just came from Bogota, Colombia.
Okay.
Where we did one. So we opened a registration for people to show up. We did it at a nightclub in the main part of Bogota. It was such a beautiful place, such a cool place. And the idea was not to do a service because they listened to us every week. It was the other way around. We wanted to make an event for us to be able to listen to them.
Oh, that's smart.
So it's a meet and greet. Basically, it's a place where we can connect with the people that are connecting to the church. It was funny because people were coming thinking that it was a service, and suddenly they see us not doing a service. Just we created small groups inside of the room, and we just go from small groups to small group in order and listening and asking them questions. And at the same time, we make them connect to each other so they create community as well. So we just did one in Bogota. As I said, 400 people signed up to show up. It was crazy. We were not expecting so many people at all. People were standing in the room because we had a room for 150 people. And we were not expecting so many people, but it was beautiful. So what we did is we separated into 3 days. The first day we spent it with the leaders of the community because we know we have leaders that are leading small groups or they're serving on the church online. So we try to dedicate more time to them. The second day we do the pop-up itself where everyone comes. And then we have a last supper, as we call it, where we bring some of the new leaders and the old leaders into a last meeting. And we spend time with them. The idea would be for next year to start doing in-person small groups on those countries.
So the end game of gathering people together is to start to build some of the relationships physically. You're connecting digital people together through starting to build physical relationships to hope to do your discipleship system of small groups within the physical space. So a church in Miami is wanting to start physical small groups in Bogota, Colombia. That's what I'm garnering from that.
Yeah, you said it so good. I need to record that and show it to my people because you said it better than I.
That's awesome. However, I can help you make that happen. Like that's intriguing to me. But like when you say that to people in Bogota, like do they buy that? Is that something they're interested in?
They went crazy.
No kidding.
They went crazy. When we said that we were going to open small groups in Bogota, they were like, finally, because we love the digital church. We love connecting through Zoom, but we're kind of missing sometimes, not every week, but sometimes we miss seeing some people. So we're trying to add that in-person part. Not by opening a church or opening a building, but by creating small groups. But still, we're going to have the Zoom groups as well because people might just don't want to go to an in-person group and just stay online, and it's fine.
I love this. So in Bogota, Colombia, I'm curious. Let's unpack this. Are you giving people, like, are you setting up the groups for people? Are you traffic copying people for Bogota from Miami? Are you empowering them to create their own groups and recruit their own people to come in? Like, what does building groups look like on another continent?
Well, that is a question that we're trying to unpack right now, because what happened this time is we, as we said, we went and we connected with people from our congregation that are connecting digitally, and they already feel leaders or they behave as leaders. Maybe they're leading a small group, one of these small groups on Zoom, or they're co-leading one of these small groups on Zoom, or they're serving as a graphic designer or a host on the YouTube, and they're part of a group as well. So we connected to them first, and we're trying to empower them to be able to open these small groups around the city. The idea is to spend this next 6 months giving them the tools and then giving them the authority to start creating the groups. It might be a mess. It might not go well at first, and we're willing to take it because we feel like the church we're doing, sometimes it is a mess.
Yeah.
But we're learning and we're not afraid of failing.
Oh my gosh. And if it does work, the upswing of this, where you're training people, giving them resources, giving them time to develop, to catch vision towards creating new physical community on another continent. Like that's phenomenal. It's an experiment. It could get ugly, but hey, give it a shot. See what happens. I love it. Tell me, how do you, why Bogota? What's next on your roadmap? Like how aggressive during this experiment period, how aggressive are you going to be?
So Bogota, we decided because on our YouTube channel, our first city on the insights was Bogota. So we said, okay, let's go there. So the second city is going to be Lima, Peru.
Oh, okay.
And that's going to be on September. Many people of our community doesn't know this, but I'm revealing it to you first.
Da, da, da. All right. We got an exclusive right here. We're going to Lima. That's awesome.
So we're going to Lima. That's going to be on September. I would love to do at least, including the one in Lima, two or three more before the end of the year. And then continue next year on doing this. Because at the same time, we're learning how to do these pop-up churches or these pop-up opportunities. We're trying to learn how to make it work.
You know, the thing that I really like about the pop-ups is you've got a viable long-term discipleship plan, a strategy on the back of it. Like you're not, to be honest, like I was expecting you to say, yeah, and then we're going to start doing live services down there. We're going to rent a band and pipe in video teaching. Like it was, you know, my gut was, because I've heard churches do this where it's more about, you know, creating another location for a service. But the thing, like you're looking at the discipleship, at a community aspect, at far more relationship. Because you're valuing what you do digital at that high level to do the service component, the teaching component, what you're trying to get to is community. And that's an interesting take on this.
Well, a friend that is a pastor in one of these places where we went to do a pop-up, he asked me, hey, I need to ask you this. Are you opening a church in here? Like, are you competing with us? And I said, well, you don't understand it. We're already here. Like, and we're everywhere. We don't need to open a building or open the church as it's been to be able to be here. We're already here. We're just trying to connect to the people that are already connecting to us. And as we said, it would be a failure to start saying, now we're going to have church in Bogota, because we know we already have it. And people are connecting to the church already and they feel we're their church. So we would be telling them, okay, what you would been doing is not being enough. And we do feel it's enough. We do feel people connect. They connect with their friends. They don't connect live maybe on a Sunday. They connect on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, maybe during the night, maybe during the morning. And then they connect to a small group. So they're creating community. So yeah. Our plan is not to, it's not an interest night, I think they call it, when we go to a place and see how many people do they have in order to open a building or a church building. And no, that's not our idea.
Well, and once again, if we do something different, you're going to reach different types of people. And so you're a walking example of this. And so you're growing from, you know, massive numbers online, starting to recruit and build micro communities or small groups scattered around Latin and South America. You're figuring out the algorithms and continuing to push your message and some of your programming into some new areas. I don't know what, like, if you put much thought into metaverse and virtual reality, kind of what's next for you? What are y'all looking at?
Well, we're trying to get into the metaverse thing because, as we said, I think we had an advantage with the Hispanic church because we started doing online church 12 years ago. And of course, it was a long process, a hard process. But when it was time for everyone to jump in, we had these 10 years of experience. So this year, the beginning of the year, we spoke to the church and we said, oh, we're going to start investing into this metaverse concept. We have no idea how it looks like or how it's going to work, but we're going to start investigating. This year, the idea is to start investigating it, to start asking the questions, to understand how it works, what can we do, because we don't just want to take the same service and put it on the metaverse. We're trying to understand the culture of the metaverse and do something that is relevant for the metaverse, because that's every medium, it's a message on itself. So we're trying to understand what is the message and how the medium works in order to speak to the medium, to the place as it should be.
That's beautiful. And we're going to have some fun conversations on the side because I've got some ideas, but the idea of the medium is the message and understanding that and tailoring the message differently for the different environments that you're in that's a huge step. And really I would suggest, it's a challenge for a lot of churches today. You know, omnichannel was really popular pre-COVID. You know, get your message and get it on every channel possible. And pre-COVID, before the technological shifts that happened as a result of COVID, omnichannel may have been the best strategy at that time. But coming out of COVID, where we've seen massive adoption and massive acceleration within these technologies, what we need to understand is there's more nuance, there's more contextualization within these. And like what you're communicating on YouTube is going to be different than Facebook, which is going to be, and you know, I dare say Facebook in, you know, let's even take it out of the contextualization. Facebook in Miami is going to be different than Facebook in Chicago or Facebook in Los Angeles or Mexico City because of the different contextualizations that are there, which is why actually I love the idea of where you're using digital to reach masses, but you're using the small groups, you're using the watch parties to break masses down to an individual level. You're giving people an opportunity to speak to each other, to be discipled within their contextualizations. And that's something I feel like we as the church miss. We try to keep everything large so that we feel good about our numbers. And I don't want to unpack, you know, a lot of that. But I think that the opportunity to break it down small, to let digital lead towards small relational opportunities is a huge win. And I'm excited to see where Casa Miami is going in the near future, Ezekiel. I got to tell you, once again, man, I apologize. I'm from Miami. I've been here a long time. And you kind of slipped in out of nowhere. And I'm like, this is awesome. I love this. Very, very cool.
We're pretty underground. We're pretty underground. Yeah, I know. But that's been awesome too, because as I said, we were a really small church before COVID. We're a pretty much better church after COVID. And we learned what we had to do. I had never had 300 people in a room in my life until last week in Bogota.
Wow.
So the kind of church we're doing, it's much better for us. As I said, I don't know if this is for everyone, but for us, this is what we know. This is, I don't know how to express it in English. I'm suffering with it. But this is the thing that naturally comes from us. This is us, basically. We learned, we understood our line and what we could do, and we try to follow it. We're trying to be us and trying to connect with people like us around the globe, and it's been crazy. It's been crazy. And some friends, they asked me, how are you doing with your numbers in person? And when I say, we have 120 people, and they're like, thank you for being so vulnerable, so open. Like, if I'm saying something bad, I'm like, but we're happy with it. Like, again, and the place is full. We're in the conversations on how to open maybe a second service without cameras. But again, we're thinking, do we want to do it? Do we want to spend energy on a second service? Or we want to spend energy on the metaverse? Do we want to spend energy? Do we want to burn out our volunteers in order to open a second service? Or we want to keep it like this, that we have a service and then we go home, everyone goes to their houses, they have time with their families. Because at the same time, we're so big on relationships. After a service, people stay 30, 40 minutes, maybe an hour, talking at the building, on the building to other friends. Do we want to miss that? Do we want to ruin that? And the beautiful thing is, we went to Bogota and the same thing happened. The same culture. People overstayed talking to other friends and other people that they had just met. So it does work. It does work. So we're in that process of trying to understand.
I tell you what, even just trying to understand, it's interesting. We were talking with El Michelle last week, and she said the same thing about African-American church. It's standing around after the service. It's talking. It's building those relationships. That's why physical is so prevalent within African-American. And you're even alluding to it with some of the physical stuff that you've been talking about here. The real challenge, I would think, for you and for other digital first churches is, how do we capitalize on that? How can we create the after service lobby environment where they're sitting around and talking, they're able to engage in dialogue? And I know, like, our friends over at Altar Live, I don't know if you're familiar with that platform, but they've done some big steps in that area. But I think there's even more opportunities to make sure that we're not losing the commute, that relational connection point, to get people connected and hooked to move beyond just content and really start to even engage in building that digital community. And so you may have just poked the bear on something right there. And so this has been a great conversation. This will be one of many. I have a feeling. I want to check back in with you further down the road, see how your digital to physical is going, and see how Lima's going and Bogota, and I'm sure many other opportunities to kind of build these physical off of digital, which is such a brave and, I believe, blue ocean, huge opportunity ahead. And so, Ezekiel, thank you for the time, and we'll put contact info and some other links in the show notes for people that are interested. And definitely looking forward to seeing what God has in store for Casa Miami.
Of course. Thank you so much, Jeff. And thank you for everything you're doing, for opening our minds and being in front of everyone, doing it first. It's helping us all to just follow you on what you're doing.
Awesome. Well, hopefully we're following God, because if we're following me, we're all screwed. But hey, we're gonna land the plane. For Ezekiel, this is Jeff with the Church Digital, Digital Church Network, Leadership Network, and God knows a whole bunch of other fun stuff. Thanks for jumping on the show here. We'll see you next time on the pod. Y'all have a good day.